Back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark. And everyone's heard about this Brian Koberger situation, also about the P. Diddy results of that jury trial that we got yesterday. So I want to reach out to a great friend of mine, John Davis, former federal prosecutor, current criminal defense attorney with Kessler Williams. JD, good to talk to you, buddy.
Brad, how you been?
Well, I've been good. Also, I was going to say the guy whose hair has its own zip code, John Davis.
I thought I told you not to mention that. But yeah, anyway.
You did. You did. But out of jealousy, I've got to mention it.
But it's been a heck of a week in the criminal justice system around America, hasn't it?
It really, really has. And that's why I wanted to reach out to you, because you know this stuff so much better than I do. I don't practice criminal defense law. So I wanted to reach out to you because I've got questions on both of these. Let's start with Brian Koberger, because he pled guilty this week to four counts of first-degree premeditated murder. There was also a burglary charge, but I don't think that mattered. And and so it shocked a lot of people that he would do this. But here's one of my theories, and this is what I wanted to reach out to you on, because you are a criminal defense attorney, and everyone has this idea that oftentimes DNA evidence, because we see it on TV shows, which couldn't be further from the truth, by the way. All right. If we're analyzing our legal system based upon law and order, we're going to get it all screwed up. But here's the thing with the DNA evidence. This is one of my big questions. The DNA evidence that was obtained, and they wanted to, the federal officials wanted to track Koberger's DNA to try to get a list of relatives, because they didn't know who he was. They just had some random DNA that was on the sheath knife, and on the sheath, rather, of the knife. And so they wanted to find some family members. So they ran it through some commercial DNA like 23andMe and other companies that analyze your DNA. They tried to run it through this DNA to find relatives of whom they suspected was the killer. But they did it as a regular citizen, not as a police agency. Did I get those facts right, John?
You did. It's called investigative genetic genealogy.
There you go. So in this instance, though, is there a problem maybe with the chain of custody when you're doing this as a regular citizen? And from your perspective as a criminal defense attorney, if this case would have gone to trial, could Koberger's defense team attack that DNA evidence based on this idea that they ran it as a regular citizen instead of pursuing it as an investigation organization?
It's an interesting question and an interesting concept overall. So if they were to run it as law enforcement, they would need a search warrant under the Fourth Amendment. If they run it as a private citizen, they don't, because the Constitution doesn't apply to private citizens. It applies to the government. But circumventing the fact that it's an FBI agent running it as a private citizen is troublesome. Excuse me. Specifically, they ran it through, you mentioned 23andMe, but it was MyHeritage and GED Match were the databases that they ran it through. So the defense did what they should have done pre-trial and filed a motion to suppress. And that is, hey, you have evidence that we think you obtained unconstitutionally. And therefore, under ages and ages of case law, it can't be used at trial because you gained it improperly. The judge denied it.
Right. So that evidence was going to come in, but at a trial, could that have been the basis to discredit the DNA evidence? Because otherwise, if you take away this DNA evidence from Brian Koberger, I know there was mountains of circumstantial evidence, cell phone pings, video of a white car that matched his description driving away from the scene of the crime. But when you boil it all down, in the absence of the DNA evidence, that was the only evidence that they had that actually put Koberger in the room where the murders happened, right?
I agree. But in trial, the pretrial motion to suppress has already been denied. So it's coming in. Now, can you discredit the FBI agent or agents to get on the stand and say, isn't it true you did it this way? Isn't it true you did it that way? Yes, 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 yes. But the thing has been litigated. and it's coming in. The judge ruled that the DNA left on the sheath of the knife was abandoned. And in criminal law, the fact of the matter is, if you throw something away, you're giving up any legitimate expectation of privacy in whatever anybody finds from it. There's famous cases where...
I know these.
Yeah, you put your garbage out at the end of the driveway on Thursday night because the garbage man's coming early Friday morning. The police can come and dump it in the back of their truck and go through your garbage because you're sending a signal to the world, I don't have any expectation of privacy in this garbage, or you're running down an alley and the police are chasing you and throw a wallet, or you throw a baggie of cocaine or whatever the case may be, you've abandoned it. And that's what the judge ruled in this case, was that there was, he relied on the abandonment doctrine and then went a step further and said, did the defendant have a legitimate expectation of privacy on any DNA he left behind? And the ruling was no, again, relying on the abandonment doctrine. Right.
We're talking to a criminal defense attorney, John Davis, former federal prosecutor, now a criminal defense attorney with Kessler Williams right here in St. Louis. And John, you have been talking from your criminal defense hat. Switch over to your prosecution hat for just a moment. What would be, if you can do that, what would be the incentive for the prosecution when there's a lot of evidence, not only a lot of circumstantial evidence, but they can actually put him in the room? What is the motivation, or why would the prosecution be motivated to agree to a plea deal when they had such an enormous amount of overwhelming evidence?
Brad, that's the million-dollar question, and I don't know the answer to it. And if I was a relative of one of those victims, and they are, I would be incredibly upset. That plea agreement that took death off the table. And I know one of the victim's fathers is saying, you know, this is just adult daycare when he goes to prison. I mean, prison is prison, but we're in a state prison in Idaho. I don't know what the security is there, but I can't answer that question. This would have been a prosecutor's dream to try this case to its finality, which would have been the death penalty.
Well, I could talk about this for another 30 minutes, but I know I want to get to P. Diddy before our segment's over. So, John, I want to talk about Combs for just a moment. And by the way, there's absolutely no truth, John, to the rumor that Sean P. Diddy Combs is now going to become the spokesman for Subway since they don't have Jared anymore. That's a rumor. Listen, that's a false rumor. So I don't want you to repeat that. But
that's fake news. I don't know that.
Totally fake news. I want to make sure that nobody thinks that's true. It's fake. So when it comes to P. Diddy, though, here's the question that I have. Because when you're looking at the testimony from Cassie, the former girlfriend, yeah, and then the Jane Doe talking about how they were forced into sex, how they were literally required by P. Diddy because he had such control over them. Isn't it oftentimes the case with celebrities that juries have trouble distinguishing between consensual and non-consensual sex?
Yeah, I think that's the case. And, you know, I'll tell you, Brad, what I tell everyone, you know, on famous cases like this or OJ or something, and someone calls me or talks to me and says, hey, you're a lawyer, what do you think about this verdict? And I have to say, honestly, I can't really comment on it because I wasn't in the jury. All I hear is what I see on the news.
Right. Good point.
But the fact of the matter is, he's charged in count one with a RICO offense. And that is a really difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Well, A, it's a difficult statute to understand. It's a difficult statute to prove. It was designed in 1970 by Congress to take down organized crimes, mainly in New York, the Gambino family and those kinds of folks. But it's been used for motorcycle gangs and political conspiracies and things like that. But it is really, really, I'm defending a RICO case right now in the District of Kansas. And our discovery is honestly millions and millions of pages.
Ugh. And we're going to have to go here in a second, John, but my feeling is that the prosecutors brought the RICO charge just so they could introduce other types of evidence to try to discredit P. Diddy without ever having to really prove RICO. But listen, hey, before I let you go, though, you're with Kessler Williams. If people want to reach out to you to talk about criminal defense issues, how can they reach you?
The best way is my cell phone, 314-696-9229.
John Davis, a great friend from law school. Thanks for all your help today and joining us on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Great to talk to you, sir. Hey, we've got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk to George Rosenthal, one of the owners of ThrottleNet, about how can you keep electronically safe over the 4th of July weekend. George Rosenthal, next on 97.1 FM Talk.